You're listening to a podcast from the Today programme on BBC Radio 4.
Time for the Business Now, News Now with Dominic O'Connell, who's been speaking to the former Greek finance minister, Yanis Varoufakis, who was in town yesterday, and talking to him, Dominic, about Brexit.
Yes, and he certainly didn't pull any punches, Nick, that's for sure. He said that Brexit was a mistake. You remember Varoufakis, by the way, as the leather jacket-wearing, motorcycle-riding economist who became the Greek finance minister at the height of that country's economic crisis last year. When I sat down with him yesterday in London, he told me that Britain leaving the EU was a mistake and that while we thought we had been set free, the end result would be rather more like a well-known song from the Eagles.
You can check out anytime you like, as the Hotel California song says, but you can't really leave. And proof of that is that, you know, Theresa May has not even dared to activate Article 50. Because leaving is not straightforward. It's like, you know, Harrison Ford entering, as Indiana Jones, a castle and the path behind him fragmenting. You can get in, but getting out is not at all clear how it would happen. The second reason is, I think that most political forces in this country have underestimated the negative effects of Brexit on the rest of Europe. And the fact that those negative effects will haunt the United Kingdom, because you will always be close to Europe, even if you're not in the European Union. So facilitating and deepening a crisis in Europe is going to bite you.
You've had to deal with the big European institutions at the sharp end of negotiations. What do you think are the best way forward for Britain is in negotiation with the exit, for the exit?
Firstly, I believe you need to create a space of time during which to prepare yourselves as a nation and as a government. You will recall that the discussion before Brexit was very low quality. It was, do we stay in or do we leave? The arguments were verging between scaremongering on the one side and xenophobia on the other. There was never a proper debate within the United Kingdom on what a post-Brexit Britain should look like, and I think you need to have this, and I think you need at least one full parliamentary term during which to have it. So my recommendation is simple: activate Article 50, use those 2 years the best you can, and then during those years strike a deal with the European Union that for the next 4 or 5 years after the 2 year period is finished, Britain should be associated with the European Union in a Norway style agreement, European Economic Area. That means maintaining freedom of movement, maintaining passporting for companies, and use that period and that parliamentary term in order to have a robust debate on what Britain wants to do later, and also to give your bureaucracy, Whitehall, the City of London, business, as well as the Europeans, the opportunity to develop the skills for managing this transition, skills that are now absent.
Looking further ahead, what's the future of the Eurozone without Britain?
Of the Eurozone or of the European Union?
Eurozone first.
Well, Britain, thankfully for Britain, is not a member of the Eurozone. But the Eurozone is in a state of disintegration, which cannot be seen by the naked eye. But if you look inside the banking sectors of Greece, of Italy, even of Germany, especially of Germany these days, if you look at what's happening with the concentration of public debt now in the most insolvent of banks, if you look at what's happening in terms of the divergence of productivity and competitiveness within the Eurozone, this is not a sustainable entity. So, given these centrifugal forces, Brexit inspires several forces within the Eurozone to go it alone. Italy, for instance. In Italy, at the moment, the five-star movement, which is leading the polls and which is very likely to form the next government, is already discussing the possibility of a referendum to bring Italy out of the Eurozone. So if that happens, the Eurozone is finished.
And what about the European Union?
The trouble with the Eurozone, with the Euro, was that once it was created, supposedly to solidify the European Union, given that it was very, very badly constructed, it was always going to lead to rupture within the common currency area, which would make the European Union totally and utterly unsustainable. So my great fear is that if the Eurozone goes, the European Union goes, and the repercussions for everyone in Europe are going to be pretty dire.
That was Yanis Varoufakis, Greece's former finance minister, and we'll hear more from him on the programme after 7 o'clock with his rather uncomplimentary thoughts about the previous chancellor, George Osborne, and the way forward for the new chancellor, Philip Hammond. We're listening to that. It was Nandini Ramanakrishnan, global market strategist at JP Morgan Asset Management, our markets guest this morning. Nandini, he makes some quite good points about the stresses and strains in the Eurozone, doesn't he?
He does. It's a real illustration of the fact that you have so many different countries who have different growth profiles and different needs coming under together and under one currency and one monetary policy, and even some European Commission or larger political bodies that deal with all of the countries together. So that diversity within there makes it a very difficult thing to manage when you have Germany on one side, Greece on the other.
And we saw some of those strains. He talked about strains in the banking sector, but we're seeing strains emerging, aren't we? We've had the Deutsche Bank shares down, Royal Bank of Scotland settling a big fine overnight in America. All these things are showing that really the sins of the financial crisis, what happened 10 years ago, are still with us, aren't they?
Still coming back to haunt several large institutions. And I think, you know, a couple things, of course, that's from the past, but we are in a time when regulation and these new policies are really going to hurt banks in general. And so finding areas to be profitable and work around these regulatory pressures is going to be a huge focus for large financial institutions across the world.
It's kind of a double whammy, isn't it? They have the fines from the past and new banking regulation and low interest rates. It means these institutions are finding it very hard to make any money at all.
Very difficult. In fact, that's one of the top reasons we've seen a lot of market volatility in the past year. They're such a large part of the big headline indices, the FTSE 100, the DAX. These are comprised of, you know, the top sector within that is financials and banks. So it really is going to be something to watch as an investor.
Another big event that's going to be moving markets today, I think, is oil prices. It emerged overnight that Iran had turned down a Saudi overture around capping production. This is all about people just not wanting to stop producing, is it?
It's tough when, again, almost like the Eurozone, but very different scenario here. You have various different countries with different fundamentals. So Saudi Arabia has a break-even oil price of around $67 a barrel from the IMF, and Iran has one that's around $62. So they can afford to produce at a lower price and have no reason to cap production if they want to gain market share and make more of themselves known in the global oil market.
Now, Nandini, fund managers like you are always asked after the next big thing in emerging markets. Overnight, we have the mother of all emerging markets, Mars, because Elon Musk says he's going to set up a colony on Mars within 10 years. Do you think investors like you would be interested in shares in Red Planet PLC?
As always, we have to look at the fundamentals, the potential growth, profits, and all those things. But look, if you asked us several decades ago, would we have invested in a company that produced small things that play music in your pocket? Probably not. But here we have Apple several years later, rewarding shareholders quite well. So we'll have to see with Mars.
We'll be ready for that Mars boom. Thank you very much, Nandini Ramanakrishnan from JP Morgan Asset Management. Well, now, a rare thing this morning, some good news at a British steel plant. 9 months after closing down, the DL works at Motherwell are being reopened. A company called Liberty House took over the plant in April after the steel industry crisis forced Tata, its former owner, to mothball the site. Well, John Bolton is the chief executive of Liberty Steel UK Plates, and he joins us from our radio car at the plant. John, can you just tell me what's happened? The plant did close down and now it's being reopened. What changed over that 9 months?
Well, I think fundamentally a couple of things, really. There was a sort of the foresight and vision of Liberty House to take on this business after a massive campaign which involved leadership from the Scottish Government, trade unions. And in that time, fundamentally, we've been able to look at the cost base. As a smaller organisation outside a major corporation such as Tata, we've been able to cut our costs significantly, and we're far more agile, so we can buy the raw material that we use to supply the plate mill more effectively.
So you buy in raw steel and roll it into steel plate?
We do, yes.
And how many people do you employ now, or will you employ, compared to how many you were employing when you closed down 9 months ago?
Yeah, one of the challenges obviously has been to re-employ people into the business, and we currently stand at about 120 people. About 70% of those were ex-employees, but we've been able to attract some new people into the industry, which is good. And the intention is to ramp up production over the coming 12 to 18 months, and we should employ around about 200 people.
And that was roughly the same as what you had before. I think you had about 240 before?
Yeah, approximately.
And what about production? How many are you going to be able to run the plant at full capacity to start off with?
No, we'll ramp up as quickly as we can and as quickly as the market will allow. We will be operating around about 150,000 tonnes a year, which is close to where we were at the point the plant was mothballed, but not near. We hope to get up to around about the 200,000 tonne mark at some point within the next 12
months. Who's going to be buying your plate steel?
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the positives. We because there were two plate mills within the Tata operation, there's now one. The market in the UK, where predominantly we'll be selling our plate into, the market is around about 600,000 tonnes a year. So it's 150,000 into the 500,000, 600,000 tonne market is quite positive. We'll be supplying into the markets we were supplying into before, whether that be construction sector, oil and gas, although obviously that's challenging at the moment. Offshore wind is potentially a large market for us as well. And we're looking to reposition the business, which is one of the ambitions that Liberty has.
Are Chinese imports a problem for you in the plate market?
I think indirectly. I mean, Chinese imports into Europe were one of the factors that affected the decision of Tata to mothball their two plate mills. They are a challenge, but I think really we have to address that ourselves in the things that we can control. We also look, obviously, there's a lot more that we can do in partnership with government around energy costs, procurement policy, and trade being one of those areas that we would expect some support with.
Thank you very much. John Bolton, Chief Executive of Liberty Steel UK Plates and UK Steel Development.
You can listen to more free content from the Today programme by going to www.bbc.co.uk/today.